Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, fellow thespians. This is the king of DC media, the one and only, internationally known, nationally respected, and locally appreciated, your host, William Powell, a.k.a. Will, a.k.a. the man who's everywhere. On the line with me is my co-host,
Nadia Williams.
And tonight we've got two fantastic guests, director Justin Tim Payne and producer Daniel Ross, who created the Ninjas Versus trilogy. But before we go there, Nadia, what's going on in the news?
Well, Will, I got to tell you, it's Oscar season, and I've loved watching the Oscars since I was a kid, and this weekend marks its 84th year. Well, I've been keeping up with the Oscar news, and I came across a story today that I thought listeners might find interesting. You know that actor Sacha Baron Cohen from Borat and Ally G?
That's a crazy dude.
He is a crazy dude, and wait till you hear this. First of all, he did appear in the Oscar-nominated film Hugo, so that scored him tickets to the ceremony. But apparently, he wants to strut down the Oscar red carpet this Sunday as his character in the upcoming movie The Dictator. And in the film, he plays a Gaddafi-esque Middle Eastern leader named General Al-Adin. I mean, can you imagine him walking the red carpet in this costume? He's crazy enough to do it, but I'm sure he's looking to garner some publicity for his film, and it opens on May 11th, but the Academy is not pleased. They have said that they will rescind his tickets if he intends to proceed with the Dictator stunt. But, I mean, we know the Oscars aren't that kind of crazy out there award show like MTV Awards, you know, where stunts like these are expected. But in recent years, they've had such a dwindling viewership, I'm kind of surprised they don't want to try and attract a younger audience. It's, you know, maybe this is too big of a step in the crazy direction, and I understand there's a fear of making a mockery of the ceremony, but by barring stunts like this, the Academy makes itself look like it's comprised by a bunch of old humorless men.
Yeah, it sure does.
And, I mean, a recent study did analyze the Oscar voters, and they found that 77% were men, and the median age was 62. Only 14% of the voters are under the age of 50.
Huh.
So maybe they need to just put some more life into the Oscars if they want to get more viewers to chime in. So.
No, that's what it sounds like. Sounds like. What else you got there?
Oh, let's see. I do have a job that I saw with the Fox Networks in New York. And it's looking for someone to execute the entertainment publicity campaigns for a roster of Fox series and specials, as well as shares in radio outreach and communications on behalf of the entire publicity department. So anyone who's interested in that position should just go to www.foxcareers.com.
Okay, Nadia, it looks like one of our guests has joined us. Who's on the line? Is that Justin or Daniel?
Well, this would be Daniel.
Okay, Daniel.
How you doing?
How you doing tonight, man?
I'm awesome. How about yourself?
Yeah, awesome. Never better, man.
Awesome. Hi, Nadia.
Hey, Daniel. It's good to hear your voice.
I know. It is good to hear my voice.
Oh, you're a character.
I kid. Is Justin on the line yet?
I don't see him yet, no.
Oh, okay. Well, he's just being...
We're going to have to pick your brain, then.
You're good enough. You're good enough for right now. Let's go.
I'll take it.
Time's a wasting.
So, yeah, it's good to be on the show, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
And I hear you guys had a big zombie-filled weekend?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. We have so many zombies. It's crazy. We are zombied out for this weekend. We have... this big shootout in Leesburg for a really pivotal scene in the film, and it involves some good guys, some bad guys, and a whole bunch of zombies just kind of thrown in for good measure, and it's going to be a real, real blast. So we're really happy that we found as many people as were willing to come out and, you know, be drenched in fake blood and you know, just be zombies for an entire weekend. It's quite astounding, actually. But we're looking to have a really good time for the duration of the shoot. So we're happy to have
Justin
come out.
Looks like Justin has joined us. Justin?
Hi.
Hey, what's up? This is William Powell.
Hi, William. How are you?
Just when I think I'm going to have
Fantastic.
To show all to myself.
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry. How could I let that happen? Hey, I know that voice.
Hi, Justin. Nadia.
Hi, Nadia. How are you?
I'm doing
Justin,
well.
Justin, I think Daniel got a head start on you there. He was telling us about zombies and good guys and bad guys and all this, all
thought,
kinds of mayhem.
I thought we were making a musical.
Really?
The director didn't get the memo.
Okay, I guess we'll do this.
So what did you guys learn from the first zombie film that's going to help you guys out with this weekend coming up?
Not to do it, but then we changed our minds. no, I think that it's more unlike learning lessons of what you might do differently. It's more like practicing for a sport. It's like doing a read through a rehearsal. So we're going to be doing a lot of the same things that we did the first time around, but we've made our mistakes. We've done it once. Whereas before it was this terrifying, daunting thing. You know, I trying to project this feeling of I know what I'm doing and I'm in charge and I'm going to make this happen, and trying to seem like really, really confident when inside my heart is pounding and I'm so unsure of myself and I'm not sure how to do everything that we're trying to do. And this time around, coming back to the same location, shooting in some ways some of the same scenes with better equipment and two movies under the belt, you know, this time I don't have to fake it, I guess, is the big thing, is that I get to stand out there, and what I'm telling people to do, I can see the movie cut together in my head, and it's just a matter of you know, it's, I mean, was it Michelangelo who said that the sculpture was always in there, you just have to chip away the rest of the rock, and that's, you know, and that's how I feel, like the movie's already in there in my head, yeah, with zombies, of course, he's into that, but I think that this time it's just this time I can really see the shots in my head that I want to get. It's just sort of a matter of crafting them in front of the camera, whereas the first time, you know, honestly, now I can admit I had no idea what I was doing. So I think that this time it's just having done it and knowing how to move the camera in such a way to try to give fear or give humor or you know, and just knowing, you know, being comfortable, and I think is probably the biggest lesson that we possibly could have learned is confidence.
Practice makes perfect, right?
Or at least practice makes what we're going to do.
I learned that Justin talks a lot.
Hey, I have a podcast network. Stop it.
Justin, I had a question. What's the deal with zombies? I mean, I was reading an article recently about there's this guy, Robert Kirkman, the guy that created The Walking Dead. He's making a pile of money with zombies. You guys are making zombie movies. What's the appeal to zombies these days?
They don't talk back.
Okay.
Daniel, you want to hit this one?
I want to hit it hard. I want to flog it. Well, you know, zombies are just, they're insanely popular right now. I don't know what the actual resurgence of their popularity has been, but, you know, all the way back from, you know, all the original Romero films and everything else, I think it's kind of lasted for a while. And, you know, when Justin and I were thinking about, and you're going to sicker, Justin, when we were thinking about the movie that hadn't been made yet, you know, we were thinking, you know, what have we gone to Blockbuster and not seen before? And ninjas versus zombies is what popped into our heads. We really had no affinity towards zombies as opposed to anything else. You know, we're certainly fans of, you know, creatures of the night.
You and I went to go see like one of the Romero films one night. Like, it was just you and me, like two other people in the theater. I remember really strongly going to see, I think it was like Land of the Dead.
Wait, was that the midnight showing of Land of the Dead where that grandmother brought her two grandkids and they were like screaming?
Yeah, yeah,
by the
and there
end
were like
it.
These 2 5-year-olds there in the front.
Oh,
we were
God, that was hilarious. That was hilarious. Here's the thing. We're talking like a rowdy midnight crowd of people, you know, throwing the F-bomb around and cursing their heads off. And this woman has the audacity to say, "You all should stop talking like that. I brought my grandchildren."
And then the grandchildren are looking for
freaking and screaming their heads off, which was
yeah, it's yeah, love it. Anyway, go on. Sorry. Memories. It's fun to reminisce with people you don't know.
Okay.
So then we came upon ninjas versus zombies, which, you know, was just kind of happenstance. But, you know, the fact that the zombies has just remained so powerful an element for film and for pop culture, I think it's hilarious. And I think, you know, there's a lot of money to be had if people do it right. And clearly from The Walking Dead, they have done it right.
Hmm.
I think we've done it right.
I think what makes this one maybe a little different too is that we tried to hit upon the zombie popularity the first time around, and then the second time around it was right when Twilight was coming out, and I'm on record as saying that I think that Twilight is utter bung.
Can we say the B word on Blog Talk Radio?
Twice.
I don't think the FCC will come down on us.
Honestly, I just stopped myself from saying what I thought about saying. Twilight is like what would happen if you took a really good vampire story and then made something else. But that was happening, and I am also on record as being this giant fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Joss Whedon. I feel like they did it really right. Mm-hmm. And so we did Vampires, Ninjas versus Vampires, the second time. And we stepped out of that, and the end of the movie, at the end of the movie at Ninja versus Vampires, we wanted to hint at what a third movie would be if we did it, if we finished the trilogy.
Uh-huh.
And so the original script had it was robots. We thought that's silly, and then it was ghosts. And then at one point, Daniel was like, "Let's do ninjas versus hell, where everything happens." And ultimately,
that's Daniel Ross voice, by the way.
Rawr, is how he talks in real life. This is the voice he just puts on for you. So we ended up. He introduced me to a movie called The Monster Squad that he just loved. He thought it was this fun film. And when he showed me The Monster Squad, I really liked the idea of all the monsters kind of being together, all the old classic monsters. And so I started looking into other recurrences of that. The two most notable ones, or the three most notable ones, would be the Hugh Jackman movie Van Helsing, which had Dracula, Frankenstein, witches, all that sort of thing. And the old House of Frankenstein, and then of all things, Abbott Costello and Frankenstein, back from like the 40s and 50s. And I started really getting into the idea of, we had dropped this hint, and I didn't even know what I was writing. I just was sort of trying to come up with back mythology and let people decide what it was going to be, where we said that all of our vampires in the second movie answered to a group of people called the Old Ones. And we kept going, "I will report to the Old Ones. The Old Ones are overseeing. Old Ones, Old Ones." And so we sort of decided, what if the Old Ones are Dracula and Frankenstein and the Mummy and a werewolf and a coven of witches and just sort of the old classics, and finish it out where we take our heroes who started out as just regular guys who got turned into ninjas, and we face them against the biggest, baddest monsters of all time. And then when I was writing the script, we said, okay, what if in the course of that they face vampires and they face zombies and they face other monsters, and we just sort of throw them into situation after situation where they're facing...
You're gonna throw the book at them.
Throw the book at them.
No, it's your turn. Your show, man.
I was going to ask a question. Daniel, why don't you talk about your casting process?
Oh, my gosh. We ask a bunch of people to come and show us their talents, and they come and they do so, and we judge them harshly.
And then we drop them.
They come and have fun. That's what it is, isn't it?
Oh, okay. We'll go with that. They come and have fun with us. No, we really do like to have fun with everybody. You know, look, at the base of it all, you know, Justin and I are a bunch of local actors who we're a bunch of people ourselves. We're two guys who started out in the DC Baltimore area as actors, and you know, we became best friends, and we just decided, hey, let's make a movie together. And you know, since that process has begun, we've always kind of kept the same idea that, you know, we're just a bunch of people getting together who really like movies and want to make movies and, you know, kind of drive our own path. And you know, we take that in every step of the process. So for casting, you know, we like to be down to earth as much as possible. It is a process. It's a difficult process. You know, you want to cast all these wonderful people that you know are in the area and just super, super talented people, but ultimately the roles that you've scripted demand certain things, and some people can do that and some people can't. So, you know, it can go down to the minutia of things. You know, this person's hyped. Is this person intimidating? Is this person, you know, funny? And
well, how many people did
so
we end up
with?
It was like 132, right?
I think it was around 140,
I was number 91, I remember.
So you guys had a
great amount of people coming.
That's
so
a lot of people.
We were casting seven roles. And when you walk away and you know, and you've got seven roles to cast, and you have 132 people, you're going to be a big jerk to 127 of them. and that's... You know, Daniel will tell you, I was agonizing. I was because we have people that we love who are in the movies before. We have people who have been part of our company for a long time. We have brand new people that we're seeing that are just, I could cast an entirely other movie with everybody that we didn't use. And I could have just an amazing, the caliber of talent that I didn't imagine that I would see. And you go and you just realize that people are going to walk away feeling like, you know, feeling like they have somehow failed, when really it comes down to, you know, that we got enough people that we had the perfect pieces to fit in the puzzle. And
it kind of comes down to a numbers game.
It's part of it. When you have infinite choices, you know, infinite diversity and infinite combinations, you can go, here is exactly what I was looking for when I wrote the character. This person is just like I imagined them. And it has nothing to do with the talent of the other 50 people that you didn't use.
But talk more specifically about what makes a good audition or performance for you.
It's much easier for me to tell you what makes a bad one. It's much easier for me to tell you what makes you immediately turn around and go, okay, no. I will tell you that there is at least one person who you're considering strongly that was rude to the other actors and the people at the desk. And you go, these people, you know, when we shoot, we have long hours. It's hard. People, you know, tempers get frayed. And you immediately go, I'm not going to use X, Y, and Z because they seem like they are, you know, like they would be difficult on the set. So,
I mean, if I can interject something on that, I mean, the film crew and the cast, they become family. You know, we really treat our cast and crew like family. We hang out outside of the movie. We keep in touch with each other. And, you know, our lives just kind of, you know, intertwine at different times. So, you know, we take that kind of stuff very, very seriously. And, back to you, Justin.
Well, yeah. So there's that. And then there's, you know, clearly you have to be able to read. Clearly you have to be able to, you know, sound good while you're doing it. Adopt a character when you're given a direction. You have to be able to change that thing. There are times where I feel like people do a really good job, but I ask them to do something different just so I can see if when they get on set, if I ask them to do something different, if they're going to be able to do it.
Adaptability.
Yeah, so there's ability to take direction. There's enthusiasm. I'll tell you, a person who comes in with a big smile, it's huge. A person who seems like they are really enthused about the project, it's huge.
That would help.
Yeah. And then
being able to read helps too.
Well, that's huge. Not just being able to, like,
kind of basic.
Seriously, being able to sound good while you're saying the lines, that's going to be important. and then after that, I mean, after that, sometimes it comes down to having a good attitude through a difficult process. There are people. There is someone right now who we didn't cast in the second film, came on as an extra, was so good on set, they are now one of the executive producers of this film, of the new
movie. Wow.
Why? Because when there came to something being picked up, they did it. When somebody was asked them to hold something, they did it. They showed up early, they left late. When you weren't using them, you didn't know they were there. And when you needed them, they were there 100%.
And those are the people who, you know, because we're not just casting this film, we're casting the next film, and the film after that, and the film after that.
Right.
Know? So when I say it's easier to say what makes a bad audition, like, if you come in with a good, if you come in with a good attitude and some talent, and you seem friendly, and you're nice, then we'll want to use you. Yeah. So, that's my answer.
I read in the book If Chins Could Kill by Bruce Campbell. He was talking about
that book. I've read that twice. It's awesome.
Evil Dead. Yeah, and he talked about being caked in fake blood and the whole deal and how many hours he put into it. And I thought it was interesting that he and Sam Raimi sort of blew up together. You know, they kind of rode each other's coattails for many years after that.
Totally.
And everybody else in the cast, I mean, you never heard them from them again.
Well, I think there's something to be said for being the one that doesn't say no. You know,
right.
look what Bruce Campbell gets put through during those films, and he's always game for it. And that was back before he was that strong of an actor. He wasn't that strong of an actor. He wasn't, you know, what made him special was that he was just willing to do anything. And by the time he got to Army of Darkness, well, then he was that strong of an actor, and then he could start holding his own roles. But that's exactly right. It's just coming on, being willing to do whatever comes before you, and you know, being willing
to... With good judgment.
With good judgment, yeah. It's, you know, it's... Making an indie film at this level, it's like, you know, it's really a trying experience. So someone who comes in with a smile and who brightens up the set, that's the kind of person you want to be around.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, Justin, I saw that you studied nursing at Montgomery College. Is that right?
Oh, goodness.
How did you get?
Yes.
How did you go from nursing to directing?
It's sort of the other way around, actually.
Okay.
I acted on a film directed by Martin Higuerita called Nocturne, and on that film, I met a local actor who a lot of people know named Carl Randolph. Who actually runs the Morpheage makeup effects company now. And Carl, when I met him, was a registered nurse. And he that was his day job, as he did whatever else he did, and allowed him to write his own schedule, and he was able to do that. And so I looked at him, as I do, and I said, hey, you know what, I think I'll do that. And he's like, Justin, hold on, that's hard. It's, you got to go to school. No, I'll do it. He's like, sure you will. And so when it took the director a little while to finish the film, when I saw him, I was like, I just finished nursing school. So I kind of did it just because. But I love it. It's another part of my life that I love a lot. But that was actually my second degree. My first was in theater from Mary Washington.
And can you imagine, you know, amongst friends after watching the movie Meet the Parents, how many Fokker jokes have been thrown around over time?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I love them. Yes, call me Greg all the time. They're my favorite thing ever.
That is Justin Tim Payne.
Well, you going into nursing is a testimony to how hard you work, because that is not easy. So
that's a very hard
work. Director and doing nursing, I commend it completely.
Thank you. And a dad, which is also hard.
Oh, well, oh, my gosh. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Time's 100 now.
Yeah, so, yeah, sleep is something I parted ways with long ago.
Dan, why don't you talk about your role as producer?
My role as producer, oh, my gosh. Well, you know, like I touched on a little bit earlier, you know, as an actor, I kind of wanted to chart my own path in terms of what I did and how I could kind of shape my career. And, you know, when Justin and I really started talking about this and it started to actually come to fruition, it just involved a lot of work. My eyes were opened up as to how much work actually goes into this process. Not only is there a logistical side, not only is there a creative side, not only is there, you know, an accountability side, there's so many pieces that, you know, play into this. And at the end of the day, you know, you got to smile and you know, carry forth, even though there may be difficult times. So I really got in over my head initially, and I didn't know what to make of it. But it was a really cool process. I learned a lot. I gained a lot of new friends, and you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. Each production seems to get more and more involved, and again, I learn new things each time. So You know, I've really enjoyed being a producer on top of, you know, being an actor. But at the end of the day, my goal is to act in the films that hopefully I produce. And I hope to kind of keep that winning streak going, because the Ninjas Versus series has been a lot of fun, and it's been an interesting journey. And, I mean, gosh, we have a comic book series now. On top of three movies, we actually have a series that's
that
on
was gonna be my
shelf.
Next question.
Yeah,
talk a little bit more about the comic.
It's awesome.
Okay.
It's made of sheets of awesome. You take awesome and you compress it into paper form, and that is the comic book.
Wow.
Yes. No, it's produced by produced and written mainly by a guy named Tom Shalemi out of Gainesville, Virginia. I am a big comic book guy, and I got my comic books from his store. And so when I wrote the first movie, I decided, let's put part of it in a comic store, and he let me shoot there. And then we became friends, and he became involved, and he wanted to make a comic book. And I was like, yes, please, that's awesome. And so he did, and it's really kind of cool to see. Now he is expanding the story. He's finished Ninjas vs. Zombies. And he's going to do like six issues before he gets to Ninjas vs. Vampires of this entirely new story he's writing with my characters. So
wow.
I actually don't know what's going to happen next. And
wow.
These are characters I created. It's very strange.
We
that
do know
strange.
One thing that's going to happen. Ultimately, it's going to be awesome.
Yes.
We've established
already
that.
Awesome.
Justin, talk about. I see that you have this guy, Eduardo Sanchez, a guy that was responsible for the Blair Witch Project.
I hope you hold him responsible.
Okay. Well, he seems to like the series and the trilogy. How did you meet him?
Daniel did it, man. My relationship with Ed goes back before his relationship with me. When I was right about to finish college back in like 1990, I guess it was 8 or 9. I was shooting a movie that I had written on like a VHS camcorder and trying to get that done. And you know, I'd never heard of anybody ever doing this before. I was not an Evil Dead fan yet. I'd never heard of Kevin Smith and Clerks. And I watched this movie that got all this attention called The Blair Witch Project that was. Just an inspiration to me that there was a dude who was, and at the time I was living in further south in Virginia, and then also going to college in Georgia, which I did for a year. And so I got into the Blair Witch Project, and it was this guy who was like from near where my high school was. My high school was in Montgomery County, and the characters went to Montgomery College. I couldn't believe it. And it was this national phenomenon. I was like, well, if he can do it, maybe one day I can. And so I listened to the commentaries. I was a giant fan first. I hope he doesn't listen to this because it's embarrassing. but it's absolutely true that Ed was part of the reason that I ever thought I could make movies. So when one day I was like, well, who can give us some good advice on how to do this? Daniel turns around and goes, hey, why don't I just contact the Blair Witch guy? You know, I was like, that's okay. You can do that if you want. And and we met him, and he's incredibly tall. And we went out to he has to be because of all the margaritas he can drink.
Okay.
And we went out for Mexican food, and he really advised us and has been, you know, kind of just there if we ever like. Line up, and if we ever needed advice or just kind of, hey, do we do this or that? He's just sort of always allowed us to call and get his take on what we should do next. He's had a more active role this time than the last two. But it, you know, ultimately having that guy on our side is one of the little personal victories of my life.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, Ed is really, really a cool guy, and, you know, we're thankful for his support. And, you know, hey, his next movie, Lovely Molly, you can catch me in that for a little bit, which will be coming out soon.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. We love Ed.
Wow. Talk a little bit about distribution.
No.
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 Okay. This interview is over. Stop.
Is that been working out for you or what?
In the words of our other executive producer and actor, Corey Okouchi, recently from his birthday, he wanted to thank all of the fans by saying, thank you for watching our movies. Please buy them next time.
Distribution. I have many stories to tell about many different distributors we've worked with. Our initial distributor with Zombies, it didn't maybe go as well as we wanted. Our next distributor, you know, it's working out a little better. Our UK distributor is awesome. The Vampires ended up on Netflix. You know, it's like from a getting out there and getting respect and getting, you know, known point of view, it has been astounding. But if anyone goes into this expecting that, like Blair Witch, they're going to make $1 million, and I don't even know that Ed did. I think you might have another thing coming. That's not, if you're doing it for that reason, go do anything else.
Right.
Like go work at Starbucks double shifts, you'll make more money. Am I happy with how well we were distributed? Yes, we were distributed very well. Do I wish that there was more of a monetary return? Sure. But ultimately the fact that, you know, I've run into people who've watched the movie on Netflix, and even it's this double-edged sword with the illegal downloading that they are, you know, on one hand you go, they're stealing my movie. And there is this little party who goes, but 1 million people have watched it.
Well,
that's cool. That's like my high school times 500, you know, that's amazing.
And you know, we throw out the words like millions, you know, a couple times nonchalantly, but we've done a little bit of research, and we were one of the top 10 illegally downloaded movies last year, which was kind of surprising.
I think the numbers changed a little by the end of the year, but mid-summer, yeah, absolutely. And to think about it, just to go, okay, just to start out, we know for a fact that on Netflix that there have been at least, you know, at least 30,000 and probably more. You think about 30,000, that's a stadium.
Pretty good.
That's a stadium. And I don't believe, so in terms of am I happy with distribution, oh my gosh. You know, the part of me that was in high school and was excited to be able to do the morning announcements because everyone got to hear my voice, that kid inside me is jumping for joy. A stadium got to hear words that I wrote. That's astounding. But on the other hand, when people attend a stadium, usually someone makes a lot of money.
Yeah, usually.
You could
get a lot of attention in the stadium if you go out streaking, but you know, it's not the kind of attention you want.
Hey, you know,
oh, believe me, I know.
Don't give me ideas.
That's the next movie.
Football, it would disturb a lot of children.
Ninjas versus nudity.
Justin, talk about a little bit about on-set directing. As a director, talk about your methodology. Do you believe in rehearsals right before you shoot, or do you expect actors to just go?
It really depends. I mean, it's the ultimate thing that matters to me is chemistry.
Okay.
I want the people who are doing the, you know, more than people being into their own characters, even more than people knowing their own lines. It's for me, it's about the energy between two people when they're doing a scene together. So I encourage people to go out and perform with each other, to have meetings, to go out to lunches. I try to meet people. I try to get into their heads and see what they're like. And then I tend to do a rewrite of the script, as I just did, to match the characters to them. And then when we get on set, you know, it's a matter of people playing to the strengths that I already know they have. So
a common thing that Justin will say on set is, that was really, really great. Now do it again and don't suck.
Yes. You know, I'll be honest, the don't suck thing is Corey's thing that has somehow been translated to me. I say perfect, do it again. I don't say don't suck. That's not me. That is a misnomer that I'm going to clear publicly right now on this show. You get a car.
You heard it here, folks. You heard it here. So how many takes do you like to do?
1,000.
Really?
I think the firm number is 11 billion.
Until it's right, and then two more times just like that, and then two completely different, and then let's change angles and move 4 centimeters back and do it again.
But let's change the script in between.
No. Twice.
Oh, okay. So you're the opposite. You're the opposite of Eastwood. He's sort of, it looks good. You know, print it, cut. Let's keep going.
You know, for me, I would say that my favorite parts in the movies that we have are the wonderful little moments that came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Generally, if people try to tell quote unquote jokes as their characters that bring them out of the characters, I will generally try to stomp on that right away and go, don't tell jokes. But if you have a moment as your character that's so true that it's funny, then my tendency is to include that moment and to bring it in, because I'm a pretty good writer, but I'm nowhere near as good as the collective talent of the people around me.
Hmm.
So I'd be a fool. I'd be an idiot to have such talented, intelligent, wonderful people around me and not accept their input if I feel it matches the flow of what I'm trying to do. I mean, why do that? That's ego, and that's not, I don't care about that.
Yeah, I mean, you have talented people there. The main thing is just sometimes you just got to let go and let them play, and
yeah,
not try
totally.
To fit a round peg into a square hole.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the best thing you can do. I mean, especially, you know, the nice thing is that we've now, you know, with 132 people, I found the square pegs. You know, I found everything that fits because we had so many people come. And even then, we're coming
up.
You
just called our cast a bunch of squares.
I did. Boone Daddy back in 1955, let's get a malt. What?
Random
so
reference
course,
of the day. Somebody
yeah, continue, Wolfman Jack. Me and Potsy are going to go
so
and be fun.
So, Daniel, what talk about performing and producing. I mean, that seems to be quite a challenge.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's not as bad as it probably should be. A lot of my process as a producer is kind of at the beginning and at the end.
Right.
I tend to be the guy that goes out and finds things and brings them back and says, hey, look how shiny and cool this is. So, you know, finding musicians and, you know, just finding locations and just cool things. That's what I tend to do. And then at the end of the process, you know, I start diving into distribution and talking to producers reps and getting things out there and getting the word out there. So at the beginning and the end is when I really kind of start kicking in, you know, my juices. And then in between, I have all this time to actually flesh out a character. So I guess I'm kind of lucky in that regard. I'm not a very technical savvy person. So
okay.
You know, I don't know all the different cameras and tools and toys that, you know, we can play with and all the software and this, that, and the other. So I guess I've had my own unique opportunity to kind of play to my strengths and be able to act at the same time, which is a luxury I don't know many people could probably afford.
It sounds like you guys have been pretty much self-taught along the way here. I mean, Dan, you have, what's your formal training in acting?
I studied actually at Montgomery College. My degree initially was in theater. I left my degree to pursue an acting career, and you know, later on, kind of dabbled in business here and there, and
right.
It's just kind of coalesced into what it is now.
Hmm.
And I got to give mad props to, you know, to my initial alma mater, Mary Washington College, which is where I graduated with my degree in theater.
Mary Washington.
Yep. It's, you know what? It's something about the the class I was with, those of us who graduated with our bachelor's in 2000, I'm doing this. Somebody else works at the Shakespeare Theater. We got another person who's done costumes for Arena. We have someone who's become relatively famous on Broadway. And just something about the atmosphere that I got to grow up there.
Wow.
It was amazing. So to have been able to learn, I did a year of video production, which is really good in terms of framing shots and stuff like that. But a theater degree, if you want to do this, is so helpful because you learn how to do a little bit of everything. And as a director, you need to do that.
Yeah,
for me, it was just learning on the fly. I wanted to do X, Y, and Z and said, how do I do that? And voila.
Wow. So all my fellow thespians out there, what's your advice on just striking out on your own and putting together, like, for example, you've got your production company, Enlight Entertainment. What would be your words of advice for actors that would want to go out and create their own material and start their own companies?
Hot thespian on thespian action. What's that?
I'm sorry, I have to ask Daniel, did Stephen Colbert ever get back to you?
You know, Stephen Colbert did not. And I'm really disappointed because he has a super PAC and he has oodles of money that he could play with and he could invest in ninjas. He still has an opportunity actually.
I think he's on hiatus, isn't he?
He can.
He'll be back on Monday, I think.
Oh, okay, he's gonna be back. But
getting back to
my question about actors wanted to start out and make their own production companies and things like that. Any thoughts on that?
The first thing they should do is they should all purchase copies of our DVD, Ninjas vs. Vampires, and listen to all of the extras that are on it, because we do go through some of that. I'm just going to continue shamelessly self-promoting for a moment. They could also listen to our podcast. You know that we're podcast hosts as well. I don't know if you know that.
I did not know that. Give out the URL.
Absolutely. We are part of the Endlight Podcast Network. We have three podcasts that are currently running there, all of which I am a co-host on. And one of them is called Ninjas Versus You. And as actors and producers, if someone wants to try it out, that's the one I would listen to, because that one we go, we have, I think, 30 or 40 episodes now that are basically leading people through the process of what we do and how this is done, at least from our point of view, and the crazy way that we do things, which is probably all wrong. We also do have a very dirty comedy Star Trek podcast, which is hilarious, and then a kind of a very geeky movie review podcast, which is also hilarious. So it's they're all at endlightpodcast.com, or you can just search EPN on iTunes, and you'll see them. My other answer, the true answer that's not self-promoting, is this: you need to shut up and go do it. What it comes down to is that a lot of people are, I know a lot of people who are going to write a screenplay, and then I know a few less people who are writing a screenplay, and then I know a few people who are working on that screenplay, and then you get down to the people who actually go out and go do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that number is, and so ultimately for me, it was just about shutting up and going and doing it, because it's very easy to sit and plan and dream. And unless you start moving your feet, then nothing happens.
You
got to
move your feet and you got to move forward. Well, Justin and Daniel, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We had a fantastic time.
I think we almost had
too much fun there. It was we got a lot of information in a short period of time.
Too much fun is dangerous.
What's dangerous?
Too much fun.
Too much fun? Too much fun.
Too much fun is dangerous.
Yeah, well, it could be. I just want to thank you guys again for coming on, man. We had a fantastic interview. I think it went pretty well. And we're going to definitely have you guys on again, okay?
If I may, real quick, www.ninjaswin.com, that's our official website for Ninjas versus Monsters. Check it out. go check out the comic book series on shelves now, Ninjas versus Zombies. And thanks for having us, guys.
Okay.
And, you know, thank you for having this kind of show for actors out there. I mean, it's what an awesome resource you guys are. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Okay, I want to encourage all my fellow thespians out there to keep doing stuff for your career and break a leg.